Blog Talk Radio. Exactly. Sometimes that happens. And yeah, that's what I gotta love about being my own producer, engineer, jack of all trades. It's embarrassing, really is. So we were talking about Keelan Harvick in Victory Lane, all that cool stuff that went on. And Allgaier raced the road course at Road America, Mid-Ohio on Saturday. He took the victory. He's doing great in points. He suffered a little setback back when the junior motorsports cars of Allgaier and Elliott Sadler went back-to-back at Dover, but the cars suffered different levels of penalties. So, yeah, Allgaier is back in fifth in points, I believe. And he's got a decent amount of wins. Points leader, Christopher Bell, who finished 11th, is tied for most wins. Elliott Sadler right there. And then Cole Custer, of course, fourth in points. They're all locked for the 12 berths in the showdown coming up in six races. I know I'm making that confusing, but I got into the office late today and made horrible notes. And the the timing of the show between me and Blog Talk Radio might have been on my end. It only lasted 15 minutes. Maybe I didn't select the right box, or maybe they just gave me a bad place to start. Reminds me of that Sarah Evans song, A Real Good Place to Start. Well, I chose a really bad place to start by getting to the office after 4 o'clock today. That could be my issue. And, so in the end, hey, the show's back on, and this is going to tell me who's listening in the first 15 minutes to who's still there, after a half an hour into the show. So, to my benefit, that kind of works. So, but like us, I've always said, it's just morning talk radio in the prime time. So, let's go with it. So, yeah, Allgaier, he's back a bit in points, but he's doing pretty. And, I always imagined you to be more like this.
Why? That's me when I go to sleep. I'm so lonely.
See, that was me about 15 minutes ago when I had to figure out how to get the show back on air. I'm just hoping that somebody's still listening or picking it up from my big blast that I did on Twitter. Twitter chat, like Twitter book, whatever the heck I just said. So, hey, let's just move on to trucks. I bought myself 15 minutes that I could step out for a fresh nicotine break while I was waiting for 7:30 to roll around. Whereas I had about 9 minutes left by the time I fixed it, so that don't suck. Truck series, Brett Moffitt, unstoppable in the trucks. He's now up to 4 wins. He's got his win at Michigan that ties him with points leader Johnny Sauter at 4 wins for 2018. Moffitt, however, is currently fifth in points, and Sauter is first. Sauter did pick up a second-place finish. He hasn't had very many top fives as of recently, so I'm sure he was a little relieved, although he did make it very clear to the media that he was not happy with that second-place win. I mean, hey, it's Michigan, it's Motor City, it's where all the manufacturers come on up, and probably the only manufacturer that doesn't care about Detroit area is going to be, obviously, the Toyota producers. But Noah Gregson picked up fourth place, and he still holds firm to second in points to Johnny Sauter. Todd Gilliland, who is a series regular in the K&N East, and picks up a win here and there, you know, whether it's in ARCA or in the truck series. He did pick up a ARCA win in a rain delay at Pocono recently as well. So, sponsors were a big question mark. We got to remember that to Brett Moffitt. Whether or not he'd be able to pursue his otherwise guaranteed spot in the truck series chase. He had a guaranteed spot, but he might not have even been able to afford tires and gas. Needless to say, traveling across the U.S., paying a pit crew, blah, blah, blah. I don't know the specifics, but it appears something has been worked out. Speaking of, trucks have one more race before their chase begins at Canadian Tire Motorsports Park in Ontario on August 25th. Now, the truck series is the only one that only has one more race before their chase. The Busch series, I believe, 5. The Cup series, I think, is down to 3 before it all kicks off. All 3 NASCAR series will be under the lights this weekend, starting with the truck series Thursday evening, the 16th. Xfinity on Friday, and then the Cup Series for what another of my top 3 favorite races of the year, Saturday night. You can't argue. Bristol under the lights is a huge deal, Kurt.
Yeah, and I know, compared to like, 15 years ago, they would get bigger crowds, but it is still cool to see that place. I've never talked to anybody that's been there, but every time I watch a race from there, they don't try to make themselves out to be anything more than what they are. It's just like, you know what? We got some seats. We got a half-mile track. And that banking on that track. And sorry, one of the funnest things I ever saw when it came to racing in my whole life is seeing the trucks on that track.
The trucks would go out for the longest time and do a Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're doing a Thursday on the series. The drivers might not make it out to be as big of a thing, Oh, there's a lot of details you covered just now that we got to get through. The trucks moved to Thursday. The drivers themselves don't make it out to be as big of a thing as it is to the fans. But Brute and Spiss. See what happens when I try to clickety-clackety-clickety-clack through the conversation. No, Bruton Smith thinks that that's his jewel, and he has done an amazing job with it. He really has. He's got that giant scoreboard suspended from cables out in the middle, like an ice arena, a football arena. That giant, it's not just a scoreboard. You got replay video. You don't just have the trucks down there along pit road with the giant, you know, Megatron things. And he put the biggest TV, by the way, at Charlotte on the backstretch. It's the biggest LED TV screen ever invented. I don't have the stats on that. I don't. And here's another thing I don't have. Charlotte, I don't know the specifics, but Bristol was the highest bank track of all the NASCAR series. I think the other one was that big test track that would shoot off a ramp. Planes that would go horseshoe of a banking. Anywhere in Europe. This is just so cool. Talladega, the highest bank track with second, and then of course Bristol, as they have the freaking that I think only goes up to about 36, where it looked like the cars were coming down a roller coaster off at every turn. They moved walls back, by the way, and they used this rosin surface to get more grip in the upper turns so it wouldn't just be single wide racing. So that's a whole different animal now.
Isn't Bristol one of them, the Saturday night race where one of the famous cup drivers is doing his impression of a quarterback by throwing his helmet at another driver? Wasn't one of the most famous ones from Bristol on one of the Saturday nights?
I gotta say, the way that Stewart's helmet bounced off the front end of Matt Kenseth's car exiting pit road, that puppy got some height. It could have reached the crowd. It could have.
Yeah.
That helmet's almost as famous as the one that Robbie Gordon threw at Michael Waltrip's car. That I don't remember the actual amount. I know that a auction company had to take over the eBay account of Robbie Gordon Motorsports because there were so many artificially inflated bids. So, you know, there was even a girl that she wanted to sell her pencil drawings on eBay. So she drew one up of Robbie Gordon's helmet, knowing that when you put in the keyword Robbie Gordon helmet, that she would get a bunch of bids for her pencil drawing.
Wow.
I was actually doing a ton of eBay business at that time. And, I'd catch it back in the seller's blogs and all that, how she's a fraud and all this other stuff. She's like, no, she just drew a pencil drawing of Robbie Gordon helmet.
Hell, and you know what? There are probably people that love the idea of Robbie Gordon's helmet. I mean, come on, people. I mean, better than, you know, some stuff. And to tell you the truth, I think I would rather want that than like a pencil drawing of many of the drivers, because just that idea of that helmet. Somebody, hey, you know what I'm going to do? Yeah.
But did she get the pencil scuff in the right spot from where it made contact with Michael Waltrip's car?
Oh, that's a good point.
Or where it bounced off of Michael Waltrip's car and hit the track and scuffed up the helmet. I don't know. I think it was brilliant. A lot of people saw her as a fraud. Hey, you know, call it what you want. I'm just glad that I was following it at that time and doing my eBay thing, and I got to follow the behind-the-scenes fraud stuff. You know, it was fun.
Oh, and I got to mention, and I talk about it a little bit with my buddy Brad and stuff, I hated hearing about Robbie Gordon because I'm going, he's just another driver that's never won, never going to win. And when he won his first race, I'm going, it's about time. Then I really started liking the guy, and then I'm starting to hear some of the comments that he made. And then somebody told me about the helmet. And then later on, what happened to Michael Waltrip cheating, I just go, man, now I really love Robbie Gordon. And then at night, his truck series with those trucks, Robbie Gordon's one of my new heroes. I mean, it's just great because, you know, and he's just another guy that's raced everything, more or less. I mean, you know,
even though it's well within me and your historical times of NASCAR, you got to consider that, okay, Robbie Gordon got the his first win in that 9/11 delayed race at Loudon.
Yeah.
The field, even though there was 43 cars that, you know, by entry spots and whatnot, were guaranteed a spot in that delayed race after Thanksgiving or right before Thanksgiving, I don't really recall. And there only ended up being 42 cars starting that race at Loudon. Now, okay, yes, it was the 9/11 delayed race. But we also got to throw in there, that was the Loudon race. Where did Robbie Gordon throw that helmet at Michael Waltrip's car? It was at Loudon. I mean, the one about Kenseth and Stewart, that's an obvious one. You know, that was Bristol. That kind of thing. So, yeah, it's interesting that comes up over the years and years and years and years. And I'll never forget, especially, you know, my own personal experience. And one thing that I hope that people out there realize is that I don't look a lot of this stuff up. I lived it. And so I'm not claiming that I'm a master NASCAR historian.
That you are not.
Oh, I'm pretty freaking close. Matter of fact, I was just thinking about when I met up with Dick Trickle down at the Shell station by mom's work, and you know, you even went down there with us on
second
trip down there. He signed every one of my freaking trading cards.
No.
So what did we do when he was done signing the cards? Take a guess.
Yeah, what did we do?
We went outside.
We were talking. That's right. No.
So, you know, that's going to lead me up to something that of course, Memorial Weekend, Labor Day weekend. Coming up, that I'm gonna definitely do. Hopefully, something that people are interested in, as far as the tracks in Minnesota and the history of, you know, the ASA series, and back when it was USAC and when it was ARCO, the ASA AMSO ARCO 300, where they'd actually have dual qualifying races the day before Labor Day. But anyway, I don't even know how I'm going there. But yeah, I got lost on the trickle subject. Well, actually, the trickle subject is part of the Kurt Busch subject, but we're not to that part yet. So, last I left off, all three NASCAR series will be under lights this weekend, starting with the Truck Series Thursday, Xfinity on Friday, Cup Series on Saturday, and, you know, it's all those races under the lights. It's just like the wolves grow their fangs. Your common folk that are, they get in the car with a helmet on, and by the time they take it off, they got fangs and werewolf hair all over. And they're just, those guys get geared up. Indy goes to Pocono Sunday. They've had quite a few weeks off. We had this discussion recently about there's just too many weekends in between, and people lose interest. They don't even know that the series is still racing. And honestly, they're not long to race much longer before they go to Sonoma on September 16th. So four races to go for their championship. They used to last till October. Yeah. Take it for what you want. The Indy series is only famous during speed weeks at Indy, don't you think?
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, I know this was a different time. I don't think that the problem that the IRL does, you know, and yeah, they were really, really pushing Danica Patrick. Unless it's just the time, and of course they're making it, but one thing in the 80s, didn't really know that much about racing, but I heard a cart and stuff. But at that time, you know, there was of course Mario Andretti, who was there before cart. There was AJ Foyt, but even you know Rick Mears. Rick Mears, everybody knew who he was. Bobby Ray Hall, you know, and that was before the F1 drivers got heavily involved in kart, who everybody knew. I think the IRL, and I don't follow it super closely once again, but I don't know if it was that charisma thing or something, but that's what kart would do. I don't know if they would push racing, but though they really, really pushed their guys. And they pushed it, too, to the point where, oh, we got more than just Mario.
Well, you know, I would have to go back into my childhood and figure all this out. I remember when Indy 500 time came around, I would buy, instead of going to get that can of RC Cola at the little general store by our place, or if it was Tom Thumb, I don't recall. I'd rather spend the money on a newspaper so I could see.
Oh yeah, I remember that.
The starting positions for the Indy 500.
Oh yeah.
And then of course for the Sunday paper, you know, so I could see the lineup. And then on Monday, Memorial Day, I would have to take my what, quarter for an RC Cola from the gas station across the street, so I could read through the results.
Mm-hmm.
I promise you, I didn't buy another paper for IndyCar results back then. I don't know, if, like I said, whether they're USAC, CART, maybe the F1 was part of it throughout the, but I did it religiously. I knew that Memorial Day weekend, I had to have that paper so I could read those results. The rest
I
of the
remember.
Year, I could never tell you again who won the next race, who ended up the champion, who, I mean, I remember that paper when Danny Angais had that wicked wreck and the picture was just black and white and it was, that car was hung up on the, oh my God, that was a horrid wreck, but he came back later.
My first Indy 500, I watched from beginning to end, watched the pre-race coverage, watched it till it ended. And, of course, this was long, long after they had started it live, because I remember as a kid the tape delay. But it was when Nigel Mansell won it. And I'm talking to people the following day. Who's he? Did he ever race Daytona 500 or whatever? They're going, no, he's a big time. People know him in around the world. And then looking at Sports Illustrated, and then you see his palatial estate in Monaco. I think it was Monaco. And I learned a little bit more, and that's when I just learned, okay, this is, the Indy 500 I always knew about. And that's when I actually learned more about CART and that, too. Okay, there's more than just one race, and I owe it to a British guy.
You know, and it was so confusing as a young guy, because, I mean, can you imagine, I could tell the difference between the late models that were running on the short track series and sometimes not so short. But we, as far as the Indy cars, the Formula One, all this, they all look the same to me. I didn't know a Mario Andretti from Marco Polo.
Exactly. Yep. That was it. And I even remember, well, it was actually when Michael Andretti became the first American in quite a while to go to F1, and looked at him in Sports Illustrated. They're talking about the transmission differences between an Indy car and an F1 car, and, you know, just some of the stuff on an F1 car is so simple or so advanced, where the transmissions in the Indy cars were simple but yet different, but yet other things weren't that simple in an Indy car. And, you know, then they got into it because, you know, F1, they didn't have an oval where, you know, CART. And some of them European drivers, though, at that time, though, they kind of liked CART and they kind of didn't, because, you know, some of them, though, just said, I don't know, because, you know, you're on ovals and road courses. But,
you know, years later, too, of course, Tony George, the George family, they own Indy. I mean, you want to go back to Ray Harone, who won the first Indy race. That family controlled that track. You couldn't. If anybody wants to argue that, there's, I mean, the George family would have been out because it was a rectangular oval, and everything IndyCar would have ended up on road courses nowadays.
Yep.
So. So the George family comes in, says, Cart, F you. You don't like the way we're operating? You can't have any. They thought they were going to go out and run a European-style racing in the U.S., and they're going to do freight events overseas and drive road courses. Who won? Who won on that? Indy rules the world of those kind of winged cars. Now, if it wasn't for the manufacturers purposely building cars for their drivers in F1 would have been done.
Oh, yeah.
You know? The little guy never would have broke into the scene. It would have been all about the manufacturers having their way with, you know, we only want the best guy. We only want this guy. Oh, this guy's not Italian-born. He can't drive our Italian car. Well, this guy's not French-born. He can't drive our French car. You know, it was just, it got so ridiculous. And Indy won. Tony George.
Yep.
And that's where it sits today. And matter of fact, Cart and IRL, Cart had to submit. And if the glove don't submit, you must. No. Funny thing that comes to mind. I had so much on my mind going in today, but that's okay. So, yeah, Indy goes to Pocono on Sunday. After coming out of hiatus, they're going to wrap it up September 16th. Let's skip to your favorite kind of stop, because you like food trucks and burr. You're from Minnesota, and Brainerd International Raceway is in Minnesota. And
well, first, you know, let me just say, I got to bring this up real quick. That 15 minutes, the Force was not with you. John Force is getting his revenge on you. Now, I don't think John Force minds me making fun of him. I'll never have 15 minutes. John Force will never stop the world from listening to me for 15 minutes, but he did it to you. Maybe he's mad about the food truck thing. I thought it's kind of cool, though. So maybe,
you know,
maybe that's... Maybe the Force is not with you. Think about that.
I think I was talking about, you know, how much I hate PETA. You know, they're the most radical, stupid people on this earth. Yes, I just broadcasted that over the internet, and kiss my ass if you don't like it. But I'm assuming that, speaking of PETA, John Force wouldn't like to serve his greasy onion cheeseburgers on pita bread. That was close coming final laps, and my final laps are so screwed up tonight because I didn't have enough time. But
yeah, you were so sleepy you couldn't stay awake. Hercules.
Yeah, that's Captain Obvious. All right, let's go. I got to get this in, even though I bought myself an extra 15 minutes by screwing up my timing on the show. The NORA. The NHRA. The NORA. Comes to a BRRR. B-I-R. So the NORA at BRRR. Okay, I'm just getting stupid now. Comes to BIR, Brainerd International Raceway, Thursday through Sunday. John Force is still seeking that 150th win. Maybe he didn't. He just needs to use his food truck. Feed his crew a little better so they make his car a little stronger. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, first, I got to mention this to the world and people. Don't turn this off. Although I know I'm annoying here when it comes to John Force. In his food truck, he would have like the New York Strip steak because of the drag strip. I know something like like that.
The New York
drag
strip. No, how about the drag sirloin strip?
Yeah, that would work. Oh yeah. And I got to mention this, so I've given a plug here for Burger King, I know, in the NHRA, the Women of Horsepower Whopper. Because you remember, way back, there was a Coca-Cola racing family that NASCAR did. People were hanging up them posters at their homes. It was a perfect...
Oh, God, and the Gillette Young Guns and the...
Yep, and Burger King should do a thing with the NHRA, the women, unless, you know, you get into the thing about that. But, hell, I don't know if that's good or bad, but Whoppers, you know.
Well, can
of course,
we come
I
up
do
with
got
the
it.
Philly steak? The Philly steak sandwich, the Philly Nationals steak. I don't think there's been a Philly National, Philadelphia Nationals. I don't know. I still got to get to the Kurt Busch news. So NHRA coming to BIR in Raw in Burr Thursday through Sunday here in Minnesota. John Forrest seeking his 150th victory in a final. Courtney Forrest, who leads Funny Car, is his biggest nemesis. Got a hiccup there?
I got it. I got it.
That was
fake. In the middle.
Courtney has dominated points in the division, and regardless of the slump she is in, inconsistent finishes, she is, however, consistent. She ain't picked up a final since, I believe, when she beat John. Steve Torrance, he's been top field, but another couple of women of horsepower, Leah Pritchett and Brittany Force, they might come into that, where's the note? They're holding other drivers at bay from that would otherwise be closer to Torrance. You know, they pick up a quarterfinal, a semifinal here and there, and those guys aren't able to get to Torrance. But hey, Leah Pritchett and Ford, they don't suck. The point lead with division standout Tanner Gray in second and Erica Anderson third. those two have been nemesis. But Rob McGahey, the one that decided to step in and, you know, screw with the Jag Coughlin, the Jags pro team. Jags Coughlin Jr. and Erica Anderson staged a protest. He didn't win. Sorry, dude. That was stupid. Costed you $2,000 at 1,000 drivers per car, where things went unfounded with the NHRA. Took them to the garage, did the Whistler test, checked out the compression, and even though it's a smaller block on the Chevys, so what? Their weight difference was not the issue. It's Rob McGahey. I just doesn't have his shit together. Stuff together. Sort of a close championship in Pro Cycle where Andrew Hines holds point. They obviously don't, run every weekend where the top Harley, you know, let's go back. Come on. You want to say it. The top Harley?
What's that?
The Pro Cycle division. that doesn't run every weekend is replaced.
It's not popping in my head.
Topper Harley, come on now.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's right. By the way, Topper Harley is the only guy that can dance while riding a motorcycle at the same time, with an F-14 taking off or landing in the background.
Yeah.
That would be cool to see that.
It's crazy how we use that joke right for 3 shows now, and we still keep going there. Topper Harley in part 2.
Yeah, it wasn't Pop. I always remember his first name, Topper, yeah, but I always forget the last name, and then duh, you know.
You know, if your name's Harley and I'm not going there. Topper Harley. All right, Net, there's a big N at the beginning of NHRA, so I almost said NASCAR. NHRA has 8 events left in 2018. 2 events remain before their showdown to the championship. They will begin September 13th through the 16th at Dodge Nationals at Maple Grove Raceway in, not Minnesota like this weekend, but Maple Grove Raceway in Pennsylvania. All right, I got a da-da-da-da, and give myself just a quick break on the voice. So we'll be right back.
I need a break from your voice, too.
We're live. So, hey, we're live. We're back on.
People, we were just in the back room with John Force, and he is not happy, and I do not blame him.
Well,
although
we were talking
about the food truck idea.
Well, you know, we need something more than drag sirloin strip. I could make this guy huge on Shark Tank. I mean, think about it.
Oh, God, what do you think the truck would look like?
Oh, what's that famous guy's face that would fund it from Shark Tank?
Oh, what is his name? I see the face, but
Cuban.
His name.
Cuban. John Cuban.
Okay. Oh, Mark Cuban.
Mark Cuban. Yeah. He would want his face on the side of it with the word force fed. And then, you know, if you were to take the word force fed at a 45 degree angle with giant Mark Cuban's face up there on the upper left, the word force fed, like, you know, from the lower left corner to the upper right corner, and then John Force stuffing his face. I think we're on to something. We should take this to Shark Tank.
You know, a reality show about the fourth family. It would be great if you know, Courtney just says, you know, I don't mind part of the family business, but I'm not involved in that, Dad. No. And then he'll be like, good, who needs you? And then, you don't want to work? And then he'll mention, you don't want to sell Pepsi, Coke. He'll do all the sponsorships and everything. God, I love listening to John Force. And he doesn't make me feel smarter. I just think he is so damn entertaining. He doesn't make himself out to be...
How much would it cost to take a cab up to Brainerd?
Holy crow, man.
I mean, that's something to think about. Hey, let's see. We're going... after the screw-up earlier, we're going an hour and 45 minutes into the show. Not at this point, but we do... We got 43 minutes to go, and I want to get through the Kurt Busch rumors and all that stuff, as well as the Bush and McMurray contracts. As we sit right now, no announcements. They haven't made it official. Saturday morning, however, they did. They said Kurt Busch is going to Ganassi for 2019. Ganassi's contract with Jamie McMurray, who, by the way, almost won and locked in to the chase on Sunday at Michigan. His contract's up, and, you know, it... I'm not saying that McMurray would end up at Stewart. Kurt Busch and McMurray obviously raced together as teammates over at Roush. And that begins my story. Kurt Busch.
Could I let you keep talking? Can I take a little break real quick? And then I will.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, cool. I'll let you keep talking. Okay.
Kurt Busch
went
to run the 97 season at Roush. And he also, you know, that was in the Truck Series co-teammate after Greg Biffle. And in that year, Kurt Busch, kind of a new guy on the block. We hadn't heard a lot about the Bushes, and oh my God, by the time that Kyle started to come down the line, we heard a lot. Kyle being underage had to run the ASA series because of NASCAR regulations. The regulations changed over the years as far as who could run in the truck series if the track was over one mile or under 1 mile. I'm not sure what that really means. Is that a 0.99999 under a mile? It's a game changer. If it's just one, and it really, when it comes to the tracks, who designs that? But anyways, let's go back to Kurt Busch and the deal with the Stewart Haas racing contract. Kurt, his contract is up at the end of this year. In 2013, he did take the extension to from 2017. Let me get this completely straight. Kurt Busch in 2017 spent another year at Stewart Haas Racing. And then ran the additional year in 2018. Now, he's searching. The only details right now are that Stuart Haas Racing, whether it came from Tony Stewart or whether it came from Gene Haas, they're both saying the exact same things. And that is that they will not discuss drivers' contracts. In respect to Jamie McMurray, whether or not he's willing to stay with the Earnhardt Ganassi Racing, which, sorry folks, I don't see Teresa Earnhardt with her holdings lasting much longer. That'd be foolish, because after the Dale Earnhardt Jr. and her not willing to have him keep his number 8 when he went to Hendrick, it's just, but there's a big time operation behind all that. And the number 3 thing has changed as well. But anyways, back to Kurt Busch. I apologize, you guys. I got my head wrapped around, all these stats as far as Jamie Murray coming into the number 1 and how much he had done with his Daytona win, his Brickyard 400 win, and then, of course, teammate driver. So if Kurt Busch was to go over to Ganassi, to me, it'd just be another parallel move. He's not going to do any better over there at Ganassi than he did with Haas Stewart. In a nutshell, Kurt Busch stepped into the 97 after Chad Little at Roush in 2000. That was the John Deere sponsorship. And then, of course, Crown Royal came in 2004. By the way, teammate Jamie McMurray, who later ended up. Kurt Busch got the 2004 championship. And then he got really cocky. Well, I think he always was. But he got the arrest in 2005 at the later race after he had talked about exploring other options. And Jack Roush had mentioned in 2005, earlier on, I don't know if it was June, July, August, that he wasn't ready to let his former champion of 2004 go after the 2005 season. Kurt Busch got arrested for a traffic stop where there was some questionable disorderly conduct stuff going on. Mr. Joe Arpaio, and keep the story short, was working the infield law enforcement center at Phoenix, where Kurt Busch was brought to, and made it very clear that he wasn't going to let Busch treat his officers that way. After Roush had said in 2005 he wasn't ready to let Kurt Busch go from his contract, Roush showed up to none other than Kenny Wallace the morning of the Phoenix race and asked Kenny Wallace to drive the car for the final 2 races. It was right there on air. Kenny Wallace was with the broadcast on, believe it was Fox, maybe it was ESPN. And Kenny Wallace stepped up to a mic behind cameras. He's like, I don't really know what's going on, but Jack Roush has just asked me to step into the 97 car today. It was a Sunday morning, for Christ's sake. I mean, come on. Kurt Busch had burned, well, burned a bush. So he was well on his way to be the attitudinal troublemaker, that there was more to come. So he got his contract with Penske for 2006. High and low results. He stepped into the number two of Rusty Wallace. He wanted that Rusty Wallace car. Keselowski came along later on, and Kurt Busch was moved into the number 22 under the Pennzoil sponsorship that had left none other than his future teammate, Kevin Harvick. So in 2011, after the season was over, 2004 champion Kurt Busch was released from Penske Racing for all the media BS, poor representative of his sponsor. And it wasn't until the beginning of 2012 that Kurt Busch came in to the, the number 51, which could often be a rather successful car, especially on restricted plate tracks. Kurt Busch ran in the Busch Series, the Xfinity Series, Nationwide Series. I don't even know what it was at that time, but after the crap that he had started with Bob Pockrass at Dover, Penske had to kick him out of the car for a weekend alongside NASCAR, by the way, where he couldn't start. NASCAR did not allow him to start the cup race in conjacent to the Busch race, where after the race, Bob Pockrass interviewed him, and NASCAR was like, no, clean up your act. You are, there's going to be more violations that will be acted upon if you don't clean up your act. And this is just, one more giant chink in the armor that Kurt Busch thinks he's so tough about. So, I only have bullet points. I do not have details, but Kurt Busch obviously had many wins over the years, took the championship in 2004. Roush wasn't ready to let him go, and then in 2005, and then Roush comes to Kenny Wallace in the NBC booth, I believe, and was just like, can I talk to you? The only stipulation was that Greg Biffle or Kurt Busch's uniform. They took them back into the driver's area, and driving the Crown Royal 97 car, Kenny Wallace put on one of the Granger uniforms from Greg Biffle. So it was, that was the ouster. I got to add, I'm still in the middle of the story, but Kurt's back online. So we got a half an hour. We're good.
Sorry, world. Hate to disappoint you.
Well, a whole new world. So yeah, to keep plowing through this, I always say plowing. We're looking forward to the races in February, March, maybe April again. me and Kurt had a lot of talk about pace plows and impound penalties for, you know, you got a pit on the opposite sides of the street. But we'll get back to that in the later winter months.
If it's anything like last year, actually the plows probably would have raced better in April than in January, February, and March in Minnesota, though, because of all the snow.
Well, and there was that snow out race at Martinsville.
Yep, that is correct.
Along with a shit ton of... I used to be a good boy on air, and that's back when the show... Back when the show started, back in like April, when we, you know, had more snow outs than rain outs. So, let's see. Here's some interesting stuff. Phoenix, 2012. Two races to go. James Finch already had another driver lined up. I don't remember who. But he applauded the fact that Furniture Row Racing was taking Kurt Busch off of his hands. And James Finch could put a different driver in just to finish out the season. Get it done. Who cares? And Kurt, 2012, you remember what a dick Kurt Busch was.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if those were his PR guys, his bodyguards, something. Stone cold face walking out to pit road. Hey Kurt. And these guys, you know, these little kids. They're Brandon Gaughan. The first guy to walk across pit road and get his picture with them. And, oh, God, how many did we meet? I mean, Morgan Shepherd.
Yeah.
You know, Austin Dillon, for Christ's sake. This year's Daytona 500 winner and successful guy in the Cup Series, kind of. He's a little behind in points.
You know who we even saw there? That lady from the GoDaddy commercials. We even saw her.
It took me a million minutes to point her out to you.
Hell, I can recognize Danica Patrick without the race suit more than I can in the race suit.
Well, I've never seen her without any clothing, but... oh, God.
Well, Aaron has, but, well, maybe Brett has, according to the ESPY Awards, but.
Yeah. Like I said, his other shoulder is going to get broke if they run too many laps around the room. So,
Danica won't win, but.
Mr. Visser. Oh, God, Danica will get... No, I don't think Brett. I mean, oh, Aaron, did I say two?
Don Mikulski. Say...
All right. Furniture Row Racing took on Mr. Disaster at the same time his brother was a freaking disaster, too. You know, the spaz continues, but hey, when Kyle wants to do his little, you know, thing in front of the, his little imitation of a cry in front of the camera, I love that. You know, when he told the crowd that if you don't like that kind of, yeah, when he told the crowd, if you don't like that kind of racing, don't watch it, as he acted like, you know, the crowd was crying. I love that. That's appropriate. That, to me, that's top-notch. That's But yeah, so when James Visser moved Kurt Busch out to Colorado for the future team of last year's champion, by the way, Martin Truex Jr. in the 78, Kurt did a good job of behaving himself. And, you know, the team improved. 2014, when I was there at Kansas Speedway, I could just hear the difference between the 78 and the rest of the cars. There was just something off. And, of course, that was because of cervical cancer for Martin Truex Jr.'s wife. And the team was just not on point. But I do got to give Kurt Busch credit for getting that 78 that was a complete underdog, I guess. I really don't know what to call it. They were up against some odds. Had it not been for Kurt Busch, that ride wouldn't have opened up for Martin Truex Jr. Kurt Busch ended up in the Stewart Haas ride in 2014, much to Tony's surprise or dismay, by the way. Gene Haas, well, Stewart was going through the troubles about the on-track accident. I'm not going to go into it. It was at a sprint track. There was a driver that passed away because of it. And, of course, with Tony's money, everyone wanted after it. I'm giving my opinion. I shouldn't. But now we're knocking on the door of Jamie McMurray's contract being up, Kurt Busch's contract being up. So who's in, who's out, or do they just trade places?
They're going to keep at least one of them.
They can't. This isn't football. This ain't baseball. This isn't tag your and keep somebody out of free agency. It's up to the driver.
They could give them an offer. I mean, that's the thing. Do you just have a totally new team? Do you? I mean, they're going to probably keep at least one of them.
Well, if you're on the Ganassi side, all right, okay, first of all, Kurt Busch has no wins this year, but he's locked into the chase. He's not a winner, but by points, he's in. No getting around it. Now, when you look at Jamie McMurray, who's on the outside looking in, almost had a chance at a victory to lock him in Michigan. You know, that's where I compare it. And now you look at Jamie McMurray and then Kyle Larson, who's sitting, I believe, like eighth in points. He's not going anywhere going into the first races, into the first 16 drivers of the eliminations. Kurt Busch, on the other hand, is locked in. You know, even Eric Almirola, he's all the way back to 15th right now, which he's set in that top 10 in points with no wins. So, I don't think either driver is real happy. You look at Kurt Busch, who's fourth in points, but with no wins. you look at Eric Almirola, 13th, both in the Stuart Haas camp. I don't know. Kurt Busch is like a stock market. He gets a little volatile and steps out at the right point or the wrong point. But this will be six teams if he goes to Ganassi for 2019. Jamie McMurray, he's pretty boy face for Roush Racing for the longest time. And you got to remember, Jamie McMurray, when he went to Ganassi, he won his first race in Sterling Marlin's car on his first start in Sterling Marlin's car. Oh, that's kind of a big deal. That was the Ward Burton Daytona 500 year 2002. All right, we got a showdown, slowdown, and get through it. World of Outlaws. I didn't realize this would be. It's goofy. Knoxville Nationals went from August 8th to the 11th. Greg Hodnett took the first night on the 8th. Brad, dude, sweet! Took the win, one of his first wins in a little bit for a guy being second in points for so long. He took the win on the 9th.
You know what
9th.
His car was?
Yeah, we do. It was first. Logan Schuchart? I don't know. I hate it when no one tells me the name audibly. On the 10th, apparently he didn't get his car in before qualifying on that Wednesday. So he missed the weigh-in. But by Friday, after him having to start at the back, we're talking about A mains, B mains, C mains, D mains, and then the final features. Now, don't breathe so heavy into the phone, please. Logan Schuchart, after missing the weigh-in on that Wednesday, he had to basically start at the back through the heat races. So he could even have that opportunity on Friday on the 10th to start the race. So he won it, that's Saturday the 10th, right? No, that's Friday the 10th. Mr. Brad Dude Sweet, he edged out these charts. Schwartz. What are the other names we came up with?
Schwartz. I thought of another one, Swass, just now, the Sir Mix-a-Lot song. God, it's not ringing a bell.
All right, well, we're all good. Brad Sweet edged out Schatz for the finale of the Knoxville Nationals. That was the grand finale on Saturday. And points are still the same order. Don't put your phone by the speaker. Points are still Schatz, Sweet, and Gravel. Now, wouldn't it be funny... if that was in reverse, or if we could change it. Okay, you got Donnie Schatz, Brad Sweet, David Gravel. But you got Schatz, Sweet, and Gravel. If they're in a different order, we could have Sweet, Gravel, Schatz. or Sweet Shots Gravel. Those guys need to do better next year. Jesse Preston at the Carver County Fair, he finished fifth. He ain't listening anyway. Who gives a rat's ass? I screwed up the show tonight. Oh, Jesse was at Carver County Fair. Took fifth in Demolition Derby. He'll join us Thursday to recap his weekend. I'm still a little confused about whether he ran midsize and compact or whatnot, but we will find out. Here's a huge one for you. As we come into, lucky 13-something minutes. World's fastest machine. 430,000 miles per hour. You know what it is?
Machine. What was the speed again?
As I take a sip. World's fastest machine at 430,000 miles per hour.
Oh. Okay, I didn't know if you said 430 or 413.
I said 430,000.
I know. Machine.
Actually moving.
Is it the Hadron Collider? Is it the Hadron Collider in Switzerland?
It's got nothing to do with Earth. ULA Delta IV rocket from Cape Canaveral. Took off on Saturday. Should reach the corona of the sun within by November.
They're going to be within 4 million miles of the sun. It's going to be the closest that man-made objects ever got to the sun. And heard that news that it's the first mission named after a living person.
I didn't know what the it's the Parker Solar Probe.
Yep.
I don't know exactly what date it's going to begin its final, outer reaches. But people, you got to realize, as a kid, when everyone else was trying to race BMX and all this other stuff, I was into motocross. I was into NASA. Isn't it funny how NASA is also sounds, people mix it up with the word NASCAR. And a lot of them are so drunk that they're like, you know what I love about NASA is, oh, what I hate about NASA is they're just a bunch of rednecks on fucking going in circles. No, I'm talking about NASA. It's all about the speed, man. It is. It's 430,000 miles per hour. That's got to be like the it of speed. I think when we went to the moon and then bombed it, because we hate the moon too. Remember that? We hate the moon.
Yep.
We want to splash water. We want to splash water on the moon, so we bombed it. All the pagans came out and protested, waving their hands in the air. It was great. It was so retarded. We actually sent a bomb to the moon. 200,000 miles per hour. That's a weak cry compared to 430,000 miles per hour. I mean, come on. That's like, and even to get to the sun's corona, well, not quite, but within, we're getting there fast. If there's a man on the moon, he had a lot more time to prepare for. He had a lot more time to prepare for the bombing because it was only going 200,000 miles per hour instead of the 430,000 miles per hour. Mm-hmm. No reaction. Oh, okay. I didn't have a lot of time to prepare final laps because of me sleeping too late and the sound of your lighter. We already did our, so yeah, let's go final laps. Oh, believe it or not, we only got 8 minutes. This is retarded because I already burnt up 15 minutes of the hour and 45 at the beginning. So this might just work out. I won't be using this in the highlight reel come winter time. We already did our cartoon choices for racing, but what fictional character from TV, movies, etc., would you want as your driver?
Oh, well, I can tell you this. Fred Flintstone didn't need fuel. That would be a plus.
That's the cartoon. No, you gotta go with, like, human.
Well, still fictional character. Herman Munster could drive a hearse, which is a skill.
Not according to Christy. Hope you're listening.
That would be a hard choice because, you know, Michael Knight, I can't say Michael Knight because that was all the car. That was not Michael Knight. Bower Luke
but technically,
Duke. No.
Technically, Kit is a fictional character. So,
yeah,
I don't
but.
Know.
But driving a car,
maybe not today.
You know, Bullet, Steve McQueen movie, Bullet could drive a car. By the way, the car made the movie for a lot of people. You know, and I can't pick Bo or Luke Duke. That one's God. Who would you pick? Would you pick somebody with that just could drive that cool car or a guy that could just drive a crappy car everywhere?
Well, here's why you keep saying guy. I mean, what your admiration with guys is, I don't know. I'm going to say Xena Warrior Princess. Because Patty Moise, back in the day, about 20, 21 years ago, she had Xena as a sponsor on that car. Xena could, like, kick everyone's ass. That was Patty Moise. And Patty Moise, by the way, was married to Elton Sawyer in the Bush series. I mean, I would say that... you know, obviously, Donald Trump, he's a fictional character. There's no way he could possibly be real. So he's way too far from, like, superhero. But, yeah, let's go down this road because I got no more laps. So Donald Trump is out, I wish. And then... I don't know. Believe it or not, I'm walking on air. I never thought I'd feel so free. I think that dude could held on to a race car like these tiny little midget horse jockey sized guys. Like a lot of NASCAR races are nowadays. Right, I can tell you're about to sign off. So let's go through it. Jesse took 6th at the Carver County Fair. 5th, right? Yeah. So it's Captain. Captain got 1 point because he voted on Jesse. Crew chief voted on Jesse, so he got another point. So that leaves crew chief with 3. After Donnie Schatz and who was the other one? Truex? Yeah. So we'll go into Thursday with Jesse on the air and take it from there. Hopefully Jesse will give a vote and what is that noise?
I'm moving my hand.
So, Jesse will be back on air on Thursday to recap his weekend at Carver County Fair. We'll cover, hopefully get a little up to date on the truck series live at Bristol and talk Bristol night races on Friday with the Xfinity Series and the Cup Series on Saturday. And we'll welcome back the IndyCar Series and the NHRA. And then, of course, go down the road of the World of Outlaws for the weekend. So I'm going to Captain always says is beam us out. We'll be back Thursday, 7 p.m. Minnesota time, Central Standard Time, and hopefully the time requests with Block Talk Radio won't be the mess that they were tonight. So I'm your crew chief Q on behalf of Captain Kurt, blogtalkradio.com/speedwayanywhere.
Kerpla,
and of course, on behalf of Brittany, she didn't join us again tonight, and
finally, the show is over.